Welcome, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Weekly Wings, a DroneLife.com podcast. In this week's episode, we'll be diving into Shenzhen Drone Light Show, talking a little bit more about GeoNet, looking at Flyability's new cloud software, furthering discussions on counter UAS systems. We'll be looking at drone delivery and what's happened in the past week. We'll be seeing some success story coming out of Western North Carolina in regards to hurricane response. Be looking at a neat case study focusing on the use of drones and advanced technology for bee tracking. We'll end up looking at how Delta Airlines is using UAS technology with the FAA's approval for their airline maintenance inspections. So again, thank you everybody for tuning in to Weekly Wings, a DroneLife.com podcast. As always, Paul Rossi, your host, joined by Samuel Stansberry and Terry Neff. Terry, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm a little tired this week. Been busy, but other than that, nothing to complain
Stayed up late last night.
I could say that.
Yeah, the fights, man. You know, definitely thought Pennington might have pulled that one out there.
Yeah, I fell asleep during that. So,
did you? It's hard to come back. That's the toughest thing. If you're going to come back from behind on the scorecard, you almost got to get the knockout because you think going in 2-2, but really she was, you know, she had to get the knockout. I think she just thought she had to have a good round, but. The other dude, what a beast, man. That dude's so big.
Khalil?
Pereira.
Pereira. Yeah, no, that dude's a unit IRL. I seen him in a hotel in Miami. He is bigger than you think he is.
Like a statue. He's like, yeah, I'm going to fight down here. I'm going to make this weight cut, and then I'm going to put it all back on and just press the shit out of my opponent. Anyway, Samuel, how are you doing this week?
I'm good. We did some decorating for Halloween this weekend and got some new running shoes that I'm going to break in soon. So I'm excited to get back into running. That's something I kind of fell out of for a while, but something, I don't know. It just kind of helps my mental mindset. So I'm excited about that.
A super busy week. Usually it's not a whole lot. Decorations for Halloween.
I'm getting
some new running shoes.
About Halloween. Yeah. Got some pumpkins, put some lights up in the yard. Kept the yard clear just in case, you know, drone delivery ever comes here, but, you know, not holding out too much hope, but still just keep that in mind.
Yeah. And so we'll just jump in. Well, let's just jump into things here with the light show here in Shenzhen Shenzhen City. That's funny. It's good stuff. So last week, I think it was just, we talked about the Guinness, or the record, you know, the most 8,000 plus drones controlled by a single computer. And then all of a sudden here, not even a week later, here in China, again, we see a light show with over 10,000 drones. It is Chinese National Day has been celebrated over there in China. And I guess it's not just one day. They're celebrating this for like weeks. Kind of similar to the Chinese New Year. So I don't know if these are all tied together, but go ahead and play this. Samuel, as the semi-resident expert or our subject matter drone expert, what do you think about this?
I honestly think that's pretty astounding. They have that many drones up in the air. I mean, I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking in my head what we're going to be able to do over here to top something like that. Because that is a swarm, just looking at all that. That's insane, to be honest. All the different colors, all the three-dimensional shapes that you're getting. So it looks like you can see it anywhere within this area, not just one designated spot like some of the other drone light shows, which I think is really cool. And it's kind of funny. They made a giant ship and then projected a TV display with the lights onto that. So not only did they make a 3D object, they made a functional display with those objects, which is even crazier in my opinion, just using all the spectrum of color. But yeah, I mean, it seems like they have a nice way
I wonder what made them
kind of show off.
I would like to know like the thought process, but the thought process behind like what animations do you use? Like what the big like ship that it reminds me of the Avengers movie. I don't like one the of the first Avengers movie. It's just it's weird. I don't know. That's a weird choice. It's not my first idea when it comes to a drone light show. Like these are cool.
Yeah, well, it's weird that the bird and the running person at the same time, like there must be some connectivity. And then this ship might be in the drones landing, like the drones are landing on the ship here. And like you said, they have enough drones, 10,197 in the show, where they can create what we've talked about is a wall, like a TV floating in the sky. All a TV is a lot of pixels. And you can see on that city view, they were actually changing the color. So it looked like there was people. So they're not just showing you and making the drones into the image. They're creating an image, and then they're playing something on it. They're so dense, right? The amount of, like you talk about that ship, I just go back to this and it's almost
that
like there's like a
one
movie.
Of the most dynamic things I've seen with the drone light shows. I don't believe we've ever really seen a display like this before. In terms of just the displaying,
like you have
a projection with the drones like that.
What is that?
It's like a little robot. Yeah, it's like a little robot VR, that comes zooming in right here. Hi, smiley face.
I have
face.
No idea what that is.
And then
is.
There's writing. It says something.
Right.
It looks like a Fall Guys character.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like.
I was thinking Astrobot.
Yeah, and then you can see.
It's like somebody fighting in the background of the.
Yeah, yeah, it looks like a boxing match or something. Like they're showing something happening. And you know what's crazy is this almost looks like the DJI. Like the DJI headquarters building. The way that it's stacked like that. Insane.
It does look like their headquarters.
Did you look it up?
Yes, that is definitely their headquarters. It's probably paying homage to it.
I feel like an image.
There's no way that's not their headquarters.
Oh yeah, the connection and everything.
That's a good point out, Paul. I'm glad you know what this looks like.
Kind of an iconic building.
That is crazy. Yeah, with the crosswalk there, that was pretty good for the city. I mean, it's, I don't know. And when you, when you watch the video, like Terry, the one that you showed, which is more or less from someone's point of view or not the one that you shared, there is this other video that I watched of this that was from like someone who was just attending the comments are hilarious too. Where people are always like, this will never happen in the U.S. because we can't even, you know, they can't even take care of homelessness. Like the U.S. can't figure out homelessness. How are they ever going to do a 10,000 drone light show? But there was a video that someone posted, if I'm on YouTube, China drone show. This guy right here. So I'm just going to play a quick part of this. And he just shows like the people sitting around there and the
hello and welcome to watch my video about the Shenzhen drone show on Chinese National Day 2024. It's going to be a really exciting performance. This must be over 10,000 drones flying over the sky. Just a couple of minutes left.
So all these people look like normal, right? They're all on their phones, look very similar. And supposedly they're all looking at like educational TikTok stuff, right? That's what we're being told, that over there in China, they're... It's just crazy to watch what he's showing and how the people are here and what you hear from people who have gone to, you know, DJI's headquarters and into Shenzhen. And I guess that isn't where all this, you know, negative stuff is happening. But what is really interesting is when you watch this video that he showed, it looks different. It looks much different than what is shown in this other video.
Yeah, that doesn't exactly, I mean, that but looks what, cool.
But what looks the same,
do you think, like, might here's have been
this
like
shit
a,
versus...
Well, that, do you think they could have had a promo video too?
Or like see like some faked out...
Something staged.
I don't know. Like this ship is different. This one doesn't have the projectile thing. Or the... Right. This road has like a little one drone and the earth. But then when you look at the beginning and the end, it's doing the same look. It's doing that same exact ending. So I don't know if this was like a smaller show, but the guy says this is going to be 10,000 drones and they take off, but you don't see that laser beam shooting down. You don't see any of the other stuff. So it's
one quick thing, Paul, you mentioned too that this was going on throughout multiple days. Do you think they could have done multiple shows as well?
I think it's possible that they had multiple. That was my only thought to explain this conspiracy theory of why is this show that you're seeing. But because, yeah, the video that you shared, Terry, that was a little different. It showed all the same things that we saw in that aerial video. So I'm thinking maybe they did one show that was just the 10,000. But that guy sitting there going, oh, this is going to be 10,000 drones. And it certainly didn't look like 10,000 to me, the second one we just showed.
I'm all aboard the fake news train. Let's the Chinese government's lying to us.
Hey, we're just presenting what we see, right? We're here to give the facts to those tuning in and let them make up their own minds. But I thought that was interesting because as you started diving into it and you're trying to find videos that make it like, well, here's this one video and where's the other one, I started to see varying videos. But again, the fact that there was two shows within that short span has to do with it being this whole national day. So they're like hyping it up. Something that we don't do. I mean, here in the U.S., it's like, you know, hey, 4th of July, take your half a day and, you know, get ready for the next. There's no like 2 week, maybe in Christmas when you have Christmas and New Year's. But even then, it's like the way that they fall apart. Everyone's like, get back to work. You know, like, hey, let's squeeze a couple days in here. From what I understand, they're like shut down. They're like, yep, 2 weeks. We're not doing anything. GeoNet. I did just want to talk about GeoNet just for a second. We talked about this previously. It's an RTK network solution. 6 months ago, 180 days is when I installed my first miner here in North Carolina. Since then, I've installed five more, three in Connecticut, one here in North Carolina, and one in Arizona. And over 180 days, I've kind of seen the growth of this decentralized physical infrastructure network. And if you go back and look, there was, I haven't specifically looked, but I can remember the total number of miners on the whole network was like 4,000, under 5,000. And the total number of stable miners at the time that we first talked about this, it was like 4,000, like stable miners that are working and functional. Now, 6 months later, the stable miners, stable and new miners, take away the new miners, stable only, 8,300. So the size of this network has doubled across the entire globe. And it's just really neat, really exciting. So from a passive income type of opportunity that is associated with cryptocurrency and decentralization, again, for the folks tuning in, if you didn't look at this when we talked about it previously, or if you weren't listening to Weekly Wings back when we did talk about it, I just wanted to re-highlight this because for a physical infrastructure network to double in size in 6 months with the amount of awareness and attention is really, really significant. So check out GeoNet if you aren't aware of it. Do you guys have any questions about this?
No questions. Or actually, I do have. How much have you made from it so far? If you would like to, have you made your money back at least?
Yeah, 3x. So $650 was the initial purchase price for the single antenna that I have installed. I'm getting 100% of the tokens that antenna is mining here at my own house. So in that 180 days time, I have 3x'd that initial 650.
What cryptocurrency does it give you?
It is, look, I got an antenna out here in Bermuda. It is geodes.
Okay. Is it, can you just like sell that or is it?
Yeah,
like,
you can sell it.
Will it actually sell?
Yeah, so it's trading at 27 cents right now.
What's the demand looking like?
And so when I first got into this 6 months ago, I think it was like 16 cents. It had just peaked at a 33 cent. And then I was trying to remember why I got into this because I recently connected. I presented something to a veterans group. And one of the, and we're not financial advisors here, just for full disclosure, right? We're drone pilots. This is just strictly information for use, not from any financial professionals. And so I read a magazine, just the Inside Unmanned Systems magazine, and it talked about GeoNet. And I was like, oh, I need to figure this out. And then I just kept researching and reading the white paper. And it's one of those things where, like, there's no guarantee, right? Like, if you buy equipment, if you start a company, if you start something, there's no guarantee necessarily that you're going to get a return. Investing in a stock, right? Hey, I'm going to put $1,000 in this, right? We talked about that battery, lithium, whatever crap mining they were doing. So when you think 650, and I talked about this on our previous podcast, like, you know, think back by the time you're in your 30s, you can easily think of a list of 10 things you've wasted $650 on. By the time you're in your 30s, when you're still in your early 20s, 650 is like, holy shit, that's a lot of money. I can go on a trip or something. Well, yeah, but if you buy this antenna, throw it on your roof, you might be able to go on 10 trips years from now. And everybody wants to know, can I sell it? I think that the value of the token is only going to go up when the network grows. So you can sell now, but it would be like getting into any other, you know, early startup and, you know, retaining that token, because ideally the price goes up. But if you want, you can get your tokens every day and sell those tokens, you know, through the exchange. It's not like going to an ATM. You have to understand, right, gas fees, transfer, what network. The token is becoming much more accessible, right? When the token is put onto more, not servers, like blockchains themselves, like their networks, like the Polygon network, Matic, all these different things, it makes it easier to exchange them. All these startup tokens in the beginning, like Elon Dogecoin and, you know, random who knows me coin, they're only available on like a single network. And so it makes it extremely hard to exchange it. And if it's hard to exchange it, it's going to be hard for that specific asset to, from what I'm seeing, to grow and to gain traction.
Yeah,
so I mean, that's what my dad keeps saying. Oh, can you sell this? Can you sell this? And I'm like, you could, but if you look at the chart, right, it's mine it just like you mine gold and then hold on to the gold and let the value of the gold go up. But hell, if you have to sell, right, mine and sell.
I guess it just depends. If you see the end of life coming of the token, you might as well jump ship. But Yeah. So another question, how hard was it to install it? Do you need a dedicated computer for it, or does it kind of run off of its own?
No, it's a little box and you just plug it into the reason too, I bring this back up is I was kicking myself in the head because I've installed one now at my mother-in-law's house, 180 days after installing this one. It took me quite a while to realize like, oh, you know, what are other locations? It's just one location that it completely forgot about. So I'm like, damn, if I had installed this one earlier, I could have had like, you know, twice as much 6X, 3X on a, you know, $1,200 investment. So one was just sitting on the shelf and it took me an hour, if that. It's this tiny little box. It, you know, you plug in a USB. You can have like a 5-watt, you know, little brick, plug it in. It connects to Wi-Fi.
So it connects to the box via cord. You put it outside, I'm assuming.
Yep.
And then the cord runs to the box indoors.
Yep.
And that's how it stays waterproof. All right.
Kind of similar to Starlink, I'm assuming, where it needs an open area to kind of shoot up at.
Oh, yeah, you want this cord top of the roof. It's got to be on the rooftop of a house with nice, good, clear view. This antenna plugs into the box for Wi-Fi reception, and then you can get a 25. It comes with a 30-foot cable, so the box has to be within 30 feet, but you can buy a 50, 60, 70, 80, 100-foot coax cord, depending on how far your, you know, internet, and you know, you set it up ideally because it needs Wi-Fi. So
interesting.
4 to 6 weeks. And this is the other thing. You buy it and then it takes 4 to 6 weeks to get it. And there's all this, you know, you're like, what is that? And it's yeah.
Might be able to buy it from one of the other retailers a little faster. Might cost
other
more,
retailers. But... Go on. It's crazy. Go on eBay. You know, people are literally trying to charge like three times because some people see it as a short-term investment. I'm just going to buy an antenna, wait 4 to 6 weeks, get it. And then when somebody's trying to buy one 4 to 6 weeks from now, I'm going to have mine for sale on a third party marketplace for 3X the value. And I'm going to make my 3X in 1 month instead of 6 months. But once you sell it, now you're not getting any mining from it. So there is this like stupid, strange resale market where, you know, I wouldn't buy one for more than $800 or something like that.
Well, it looks like you can get it off of Rock Robotic for $700. I don't know what the RTK access means here, but they have 62 available for $700, and they're even yellow.
Right on. Yeah, I think they wrap theirs. I think Hifix is selling it where I don't remember if it even says Hifix on it or what the heck it said, but I think Rock Robotics is wrapping theirs potentially.
It's the same exact thing.
There's yeah, no just wrap, like a sticker.
The knobs are different, I think.
Yeah, check out GeoNet. So moving on to more of a tech side, looking at the you know technology, what's coming up here. Recent article in DroneLife.com, Flyability unveils new cloud solutions for the Helios 3 at Energeo 2024. So the Flyability drone, you know, scroll down here. Oh, we're not going to get any pictures. That's all right. We'll bring up the website. So Flyability, indoor drones for inspection purposes. And just like any organization, right, what comes first or manufacturer, right? What comes first? The hardware, you know, the drone. Because without the drone, you can't get the data. The Helios 3 has been years of, right, development, feedback from customers, research, development. And when it comes to indoor flight, this is not an inexpensive drone, but nothing, you know, very few if any products are matching what this thing can do with, you know, you can see here, it's using LiDAR for GPS confined space, low light navigation. With a LiDAR sensor, you don't have to have, you know, a high amount of light in order to navigate because you're not relying on a visual sensor. However, when you're doing an inspection, you can't inspect things in the dark unless it's thermal. So when you're trying to do confined space visual inspections in GPS denied areas, LiDAR proves to be a great source. The other benefit of having LiDAR is you can map, right? The LiDAR is used for, you know, navigation, but it's also picking up data so you can map your tunnels, your caves, your crevices, all these pipes and silos and boilers and all those, you know, hard to reach places. So you're not just inspecting it, you're actually, you know, mapping it for future purposes. So they've created awesome hardware, but again, we I don't know if we talked about this recently. There was a couple of things I was presenting on recently. One of them was like the data collection. As you collect data, what do you do with that? You know, you have a folder with a bunch of pictures. You have a folder with, you know, these point clouds, this LiDAR data. How do you tap into it and make it useful? And so what Flyability has announced, I'm just going to go back to their page because they have it here, is the Flyability Cloud. So now it's, hey, go fly, go capture all your data. And when you're done, get all your data. Once you're done, you can dump that data into Flyability's new cloud software. And that cloud software is going to, you know, take and produce all the pictures, maps, models in an inspectable format that you can then share throughout your organization with your clients and your customers. So this is a huge step in not just being able to inspect those hard to reach indoor confined critical assets, but also, you know, make decisions with that data that can be, you know, broadcasted, presented throughout an entire organization.
Yeah. Okay. So as far as you know, I haven't seen anything kind of similar to this. Have you seen anything similar, like software wise?
For other industries, like, yes, there is softwares that exist for, say, power and utilities. If you're going to take a drone and go fly a bunch of, you know, power lines, what do you do once you have that data? So there is systems or software where you can dump a bunch of pictures of power lines and it will automatically, you know, assign those pictures to the appropriate poles. 3D mapping and modeling, right? There's softwares out that, you know, stitch your pictures together to make maps and models, but this is all for outdoor drone flight. There is...
It kind of looked like it was getting a little precip on it, too, in one of the videos. I don't know if that's one of the features, is like allowing for some of that. Just having that cage around it, though.
You know, caves, caverns, think of, you know, manholes, you know, all these sewer systems. You know, when you're driving down roads, there's these, you know, wastes. Sewer pipes, electrical, that are underground. And so you can lift a manhole cover and now you can drop this drone in and send this drone underground in order to go fly and take pictures. But again, what do you do once you have the pictures in the video? So go ahead.
It says it's a web-based application. It's like, I would like to think of it as like a Google Drive almost, so that you can share with your, like, this is great for businesses. Like, since they're starting to make the software, they've already made it. There's no reason not to choose their product over, let's say, their competitors, because their competitors don't have the means to efficiently go through the data, like you were saying. This is actually kind of revolutionary in terms of you have the physical means and you have
collect the data and process it. It's all one stop shop. You can go to one company and get your drone and your software. And that is something we're just starting to see in the last 2 years. And especially by these well built companies. So DJI Terra is a software. So you can go out, like, this is a 3D model.
pretty impressive at that.
Right, so you can go out and you can map and collect your data, right? Drone flies, collects the data, and now you can put it into DJI Terra and you're processing your software, or you're processing your data in into, you know, a solution that you can then share it with your whole organization, do your measurements. It's basically like Google Earth, but for your own data. And what Flyability has created is exactly like you said, it's like Google Drive for your drone collected data.
Yeah.
And they're doing it in an industry where no one, like indoor confined space, inside tanks. You know, look at this drone. This drone can do NDI non-destructive testing. Do you see this syringe right here? This syringe has a fluid in it because it's important when you are putting this, like this, this sensor right here will go up against a metal structure and it will measure like the thickness. It'll basically do like a scan of the metal. But you have to put a little liquid on in order for the, kind of like when you're doing
I know what you're getting at.
The baby.
The kid, for, yeah.
Sonogram. I think sonogram. So you put a little bit of that on there and then it's allowing the measuring the device to do its job. So can you imagine this drone's in a confined space flying and you have a button in order to push a little bit of fluid into the, out onto this surface, and then you can put it on the surface and take your measurement. That's crazy.
That is insane.
It's probably like 40,000. Yeah. Definitely not in the low tens.
And who knows how much that software costs?
Yeah, my guess is you're at 4,000 to 6,000 base annually, and if you're wanting some like, you know, enterprise, all the bells and whistles, maybe 12,000 to 15,000 annually.
Than two users.
Yeah, more than two. Yeah. If you want more than one user, an extra 7,000 per user. But for what it does, right? When you think of the industry and what you're able to charge to the client, the ROI really has to be there, because the other option is, you know, sending people in, scaffolding, all kinds of, you know,
it's efficient
time.
They made it even more efficient with their software.
Yes. So moving on, we're looking at some counter UAS tech. Terry, I think you shared this article with us. We're looking at Marines. They're going to be receiving a new system for zapping drone swarms out of the sky. I know some of the articles we've looked at in the past, they weren't very clear on what the solution for you know, counter was. This is very clear. Zapping or melting, right?
Microwave.
Microwaving.
Okay. So every time we talk about the like counter UAS technology, you always bring up, this is like something that's in Call of Duty. So I would like to point out, when I was 10 or so and Black Ops 2 was out, there was a like a kill streak that you could get that is basically just like a microwave that you just kind of, it's just a panel and it's a microwave and it just like emits damage. So you could like block off doorways and stuff. This is basically what they're using here. It's been around for a while, but now they're using it against drones and just melting them midair. And then if a human gets hit with it, they get something called a Havana fever, but it's just something else. But yeah, no, that it doesn't really say much in this article. They use high powered microwave probably about 400 times in this, but it, yeah, it's just electric, just emitting. It's a sick technology.
Leonidas, I think it's pretty cool. They called it this system Leonidas, and it's not new technology. It's technology that's been in existence. So, you know, everybody's quick to talk about the new startup and, you know, what could be versus what exists, what is proven, and how do we take that and just integrate that and adapt that into, you know, the developing environment. So it looks like the company is, you know, landed a $66 million contract last year. And what they're seeing is interest and their ability to kind of adapt their existing product line in order to meet new needs. They have the Expeditionary Directed Energy Counter Swarm. So four iterations of the Leonidas system, and the newest is this X-Dex system, specific to counter swarms.
If you go into the studio chat and click on the link I just sent, that's their website, and it kind of shows a demo video. I'm sure it doesn't work that well, but of how it works. So it tracks them, and then it just melts there, just fries them, basically. When you send that much energy towards electronics, it usually doesn't do too good. And I'm sure there'll be a way to counter it somehow, whether that be, I don't know exactly how it works, but maybe like a Faraday bag type situation where they're covering up all the important electrical components to combat this.
That's crazy, but just to see all those drones sick. Fall out of the sky from that, though.
Look at that delivery drone.
Dude, that is a drone with this microwave technology mounted to it.
Oh, was that what that was?
Yes, yes.
That's pretty sick.
They are putting this technology. So what they're sending this drone to go take drones out. So they will detect where a drone is and then just fly. Because if you can't get that full sensor out in the field, maybe you can get just the drone itself. And so once they identify the location, they can sic this drone to get within range of the, you know, enemy drone and basically melt it. It's not going to take out swarms like these huge panels, but to go after like an independent. That's crazy. And so I saw, this is huge, counter UAS. If you didn't do like research, you know, diving into this, you would think that this stuff is just like new. These companies, so we've got a video here. This is crazy. So it, while it's moving mobile. And so I started to realize last year there was three companies that got, counter UAS as a service. So the military is trying to figure out, here they call this the pod. Check that out, the Leonidas pod. So
it's like a machine gun that emits energy.
That's pretty sweet though. So what there's what they were saying is the military is trying to adapt this technology themselves, but when you don't have the trained units, and that's why we saw the military starting to actually create these platoons of UAS, you know, teams where you have pilots, you have technicians, you have counter UAS specialists all working together. because what the hell was I going to say? Yeah. And if you don't have workforce, if you don't have a military force of folks that know how to use the technology, you can't integrate it. So as this technology matures, the military has actually recommended three companies. If you look back in 2023, there was a lot of demos that were done. And after these demos, three companies were recommended for the military to actually hire and contract with. So like these defense contractors demonstrated the technology, and you know, CACI, and I wish I had pulled it up here, but it was I went down a rabbit hole in this article here, the first one that you shared, and the prototype. So Army gets first, these little related articles. The Army gets its first prototype. This was back in November of 2023. And Jen Judson seems to be writing and following along on a lot of what's happening here. But three companies recommended for the military to contract in order to protect bases, installations, until they can integrate this and have their own folks doing it. So these articles go back 2019. The Pentagon created a counter drone office. Get out of here. And then demonstrations were conducted through 2021, 2022. I'm sure COVID delayed some of this development, but for folks that are like, oh, we're not blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, I do think there's a huge grasp, an attempt to stay ahead of this. But I also think that with Ukraine, there was just a huge proliferation of the systems. This is the one
I was creates speaking. Innovation.
Yeah. So crazy technology. I think the biggest thing is the use of technology in order to identify these, and it's detect. Detect and avoid, but there was an acronym. Here it is, right here. Am I sharing this?
Yeah.
Detect, track, identify, and or defeat. So the counter drone office had released a request for white papers back in August whenever this article came out, for fixed stations or mobile stations to detect, track, identify, and or defeat. So just the ability to detect, track, and identify is huge on the battlefield. And then to actually have the microwave system, the kinetic system, you know, the defeat system is really interesting. But that is that terminology where it's
they should spice that up. They should, instead of defeat, it should be destroy. No, that'd be defeat. Rewording.
Destroy. You can light a redder. You can always, you know, light a redder. Light a redder. You can, English is hard.
We all have those days.
You could always write a letter to your congressman.
Yeah, I want this wording to change, please, sir. I know we have like bigger things to do, but like, please.
We have to make this happen yesterday. Shifting gears here, we're going to look at a couple of these next articles as we get closer to wrapping things up. Focusing on drone delivery, Serve Robotics and Wing join forces for robot drone delivery cooperation. We're getting this out of DroneLife.com earlier this week in the beginning of October. This partnership aims to extend delivery radius and increase efficiency. So what is happening? Serve Robotics is a ground-based robotics. Ooh, do you guys see something right here? Does that look similar to anything that was on the flyability drone?
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm drawing a blank.
That is a LiDAR sensor.
LiDAR. Okay.
So this thing is creating a real-time map. Not just looking with video, with you know, optical imagery. This is creating a 3D real-time mapping its environment as it goes down the street. And so it approaches this pole, and it's using this LiDAR to ensure that it is at the exactly appropriate location.
I think that thing at the bottom left is a camera as well, yeah. If you go back up to the main picture, it looks like that black dot. I can't tell for sure, though, unless that's just aesthetics.
It could be.
This is a robot that delivers food via the ground. So I'm sure everybody's seen the drunk college kids bullying these at nighttime. Somebody orders food. It's driving down. Somebody will just stand in its way for like 15 minutes and just, please move. Please move. You know,
dude, look at this system. So then it's like ET. It raises its arms real high. It looks like they took some shelves or drawers. It looks like they took the hardware off the drawers and just mounted it vertical. It lifts it up and it actually puts it on. It looks just like a Wally.
There we go, yeah.
And so this Serve Robotics ground-based robot, just like a Roomba, it knows where it needs to get to. It uses technology to get there. It will mount the package onto this post, and somehow this the drone will then autonomously load itself.
This would be a good time to have
a video. What do you think about that, Samuel?
I think that's pretty wild, to be honest, just to have it. I don't know. So I'm assuming someone at the restaurant loads it inside this drone. Then the drone takes it to the other drone, and that drone delivers it to a person, which is just like, wow. Talk about automation.
Yeah, so here we got this little video playing here. You can see it zooming through a city, and it's got some eyes, you know, cameras in the front. Please take your item. It's got some cameras here. But, yeah, so, I mean, it's already doing ground-based deliveries, right? But
now they're integrating it to drone delivery for further out, I guess.
Well, say this might only have, like, a half a mile radius. And so if you can add, you know, layer it with the drone, I don't know. We'd have to look up more information.
I mean, well, it's so, like, How does most drone operations work, drone delivery operations work? They send somebody out to get the food, and then the food comes back via human, and then they load it into the drone, and then they fly. Why not let a robot do that?
You know? Yeah.
Corridors for them to drive down.
And especially if you have like a less, like, because what they're showing is like this robot crossing streets, and I mean, that's wild. If it can do that, it should certainly be able to, you know, navigate, you know, just like a small area, not like a complex or a strip mall. Yeah. Well, we'll have to see. You might have to go to, I don't know if it states where this is happening, somewhere here. 5 years. Looks like a Wing. Oh, this is Wing's numbers. 5 years, 400,000 deliveries. But certainly huge development. So it'll be exciting to see how this grows here with Wing, and then how this technology gets integrated into other operations. Wasn't even sharing my screen there. Boom. Now, one more drone delivery story here that we're touching on, dronelife.com. Matternet. Matternet still making news here in the U.S. industry. Launches first drone home delivery service in Silicon Valley. The first offering zero emissions and ultra-fast deliveries using their FAA-approved Matternet M2 platform. Samuel, would you like to, how about a video?
There we go. I do love a video.
Oh. Do appreciate a good video. Oh, we're loading up some, putting the pastries right into the box. No bag or anything?
No bag.
You see that? Look at that, a cell phone.
Mm. What?
Your pilot credentials, or he's like, I'm not even a pilot. The guy's not even a pilot. Oh, there's the pilot.
It's kind of funny how the drone carrier opened up. It was like a flower kind of bloomed open. I've never seen that before.
Ooh, that's a huge box. Ooh, you got your goods there. All right. So we got an app, I see. So we're in Silicon Valley. You can get your charger. You can get your NyQuil, your ibuprofen, a little sushi. Lots of medicine out there. But yeah, this little kind of like Bluetooth security there. You got the flower bloom that you mentioned. So waterproof. Self-loading, pretty neat technology.
So opposed to having a distribution center, this is more or less like a stationary object that you put outside of these companies to let them load packages.
Kind of like a drop-off center, the drone just assuming.
Well, yeah, it's just like each. So like your McDonald's gets a drone, or they could have like 10 if they scale it up. You know, like. It's a different approach to drone delivery.
Yeah, and so this is like for people to see, it's basically like a 6 foot tall cylinder, and then on top of that is like a pad for landing with
it's like
four pedals, and it kind of, you know, closes in on itself. So a drone could land and then receive an item and then take off for a delivery. So it's kind of like a receptacle that it looks like could be used for housing the drone and charging the drone, but definitely for autonomous package loading. And you can have 2, 3, 4, maybe 6 of these, you know, all ready to go.
I would say they would need to make their form factor a little smaller than what it is if they want to.
And I think what you could do is you could deliver to one of these. So then if you had to have like controlled access on the delivery side, instead of just lowering it to someone's yard, you could actually deliver it to one of these receptacles where someone could then, you know, scan in to receive the package. That's pretty cool too.
Yeah. Like hub to hub. I'm sure if you can take off with the package, I'm sure you can land with it.
So yeah, drone delivery, I think for the next few years, and we're just going to see continuous development announcements in that space with operators, manufacturers, software, regulatory approvals, maybe Part 108. So it's going to be really, really interesting to watch this market segment of the UAS industry just grow and just continue to grow. Shifting gears, we're here in North Carolina, Surry County farmers using drone to deliver supplies to Western North Carolina. So as folks have seen, and we touched on, it's, you know, the storm that came through, extremely horrific damage, the amount of water that created significant damage across the western part of the state, making it very hard to support individuals in need of supplies, your basic water, food, but then also to give people that critical life-saving care that was needed and to be able to do any kind of search and rescue efforts. So what happened here in North Carolina, let's see, I thought we had a video here, but maybe not. No, we did. Here it is. Nice long one.
State's Madison Forsey spoke to a search who's able to get police are facing right now. Roads closed is Highway 70 in more remote areas. Find those missing people, to get people that are in these more remote areas of Western North Carolina the supplies that they need.
It's devastating.
Hope can come from anywhere, and sometimes it comes from a black trash bag 30 feet up.
As soon as the flood hit, or hurricane hit, everybody was asking for helicopters, need helicopters, need helicopters.
And where a helicopter can't go, Preston Cave, a Surry County native, along with 4 or 5 other drone operators, will be there.
We've cut down shopping carts to be able to hook to our T-40 on a 40-foot rope to be able to put supplies in a shopping cart and fly them like short distance over a river, over a busted bridge.
Many of these drones are meant for spraying crops and other agricultural purposes, but now they're dropping supplies and surveying hard to reach places.
This is a drone we've been usually flying at night, trying to look for people trapped, people on roofs, you know, just looking for people in debris, anything that we can do with it. We've also been doing work with the DOT, too, looking at roads, seeing what's washed out. Can you get through there? Can you not?
They've helped out in McDowell County and spent the day around Asheville near Fairview, ready and willing for the call. Some team members are from Wisconsin and Alabama, but united by their love for the potential these ag drones have.
I'd want someone to come check on us, you know. And I know that there's not a lot of this equipment out there, and it's, hey, let's go use it while we can.
Spreading hope from up above. Any way they can.
If my girls was hungry, I'd want them fed.
At the end of the day, a little bit of humanity. Try to help people out.
The drone team says that they are ready to stay here for.
What drone is that? The massive one.
So they talked about the T-40. This one, it looks like they got their hands on fly carts. But it's kind of hard to tell because I see this winch system. Like that winch system is the same design where once the weight is, it will automatically release that hook. But he did say T40, referencing the DJI Agris T40, which is a spray drone, a crop spraying drone. What you can do is they're designed to carry gallons of liquid or fertilizer. So if you pull the tank out that carries the liquid, what a lot of folks are doing is they're just, like he mentioned, they'll just tie a rope.
Drone operator.
They'll just tie a rope off to the drone and then use like the shopping cart. So the drone has a useful payload of say 40 or 50 pounds. So as long as you take the tanks out and you're not carrying the spray or the fertilizer or the pesticide, now you can just, you know, basically carry some other amount of weight.
Huh.
But looking at these drones, like that looks a lot like the fly cart that just came out. And so people were sending a lot of this out there, but it got to the point where this is so significant. I've seen these crazy videos of helicopter pilots and they're small. There was this social media influencer, like a YouTuber that just makes like car videos. And he had just bought this small helicopter. And the way he bought the helicopter is he had raised so much money. He made so much money on YouTube that he was lit, he was able to buy a helicopter so he could do more shit on his YouTube, right? He was going to make better videos, aerial capture. On his way home from Florida, the hurricane hits North Carolina. He immediately packs it up with his wife, flies to North Carolina. The dude was flying his helicopter in North Carolina a week after he got it for influencing YouTube. And was raising money and getting millions of views because he was flying this thing for relief efforts, bringing water to people. It's crazy. They've been painting X's on roadways across Western North Carolina. There are small helicopters landing all over people's yards in the middle of roads, dropping off water bottles because there's no way to drive there. So it gets to the point where, like, if you have a ton of helicopters responding, these drones are great, but at what point do the drones actually start to get in the way of these helicopters?
Something I would like to note, in the background of that video, mm-hmm. there was a company called Drone Trailer, and I just looked up their website. I didn't even know this existed, but their trailer's made for like different use cases of drones. Like they have like take like launch pads and all kinds of stuff on them.
It's huge from a commercial standpoint. Those are the people that can afford it, because if you're doing like the agriculture stuff and your fields are, if you're doing it at your own farm, you might just keep it in your own barn, it doesn't move. But if you're doing agriculture drone spraying and you have drones that weigh 50-60 pounds, it's not, you can't just do this out of the back of an Explorer. You actually have to have a trailer to run some of these big. We've talked a lot about beyond visual line of sight, these fixed wing aircraft. So companies are selling you a trailer that is designed for beyond visual line of sight. It has like an office, computer, desk, generator. It's got a mast on the top of it for using for like communication purposes, screens on the outside. Like some of these public safety trailers, they have those like flip up, you know, you can roll the outside door up or window panel. And then there's like TVs underneath it with arms. And yeah, there are some crazy trailers for drone ops. What we're looking at now, we just got two more things. We're getting close to our hour long or the hour time here. So just to two more things to touch on, quick items of interest for people to be mindful of. Article here that came out, what's saying 15 hours ago, so this is some brand new, fresh news, hot off the press here. Bees tracked with tiny radar chips and drones. Absolutely incredible. Here is a chip, a radar chip being placed onto a bee.
It almost doesn't even seem
possible. So anyone who's on audio only.
I was going to say that's crazy to see something on that scale, but yeah.
Yeah, anyone on audio only, they have this like weird, it's like a little honeycomb or not honeycomb, just like a tennis racket waffle looking thing that they're using to kind of hold a bee down. And then a little pin, they're taking a very tiny, yeah, for anybody who's ever experimented, it looks like a tiny little tab. It's just this little square, a little white looking square that they're putting onto this bee. And they're using that. It says it's like a rucksack. It's like attaching a little rucksack to a bee, and it's a tiny radar chip that is used to track the bee's movements.
This just reminds me of the people that would catch flies, put them in their freezer, freeze them for a minute so they just fall asleep, and then they'd tie a little rope around them so they can just a little piece of string. Have you ever seen that? Am I going crazy right now?
That's a new one for me.
No? Okay. I'm on a different side of the internet, I think.
They've invented the smallest harmonic radar tag ever. So LED lights around their camera reflect off the tag on the bee and backwards to the camera. So it's a combination of ground sensor, drone attached sensor, and then actual device that is mounted on the bee. So they're having to catch these bees and kind of tag them similar to, right, like sharks or other. But once they tag them, they can actually see those tags with their very sensitive receiver. That is crazy.
The little box with all the bee tags.
Yeah, new bee tags. Little rucksacks.
Dude, that has to mess with the bees so much. I mean, just think about somebody like just forcefully putting something on your back. You have to fly around with that. It messes with their center of gravity.
and so, yeah, like they're like, why is that? Why are they all kind of like, it's like,
why is he flying like, left?
It's kind of straight. Like, what does this do to their lifespan? We've noticed that the bees that carry the rucksacks traditionally. So they're tracking movement, and they're looking at, you know, pollination habits and you know, different things that might put this population of bees at risk. And so this is absolutely interesting. And one thing I want to point out, if you go back and you looked at the previous topic that we just covered, right, DJI drones being used, the remote in this person's hand right now for this research, DJI drone being used, is the public safety, right? Using DJI drones in order to, you know, help get supplies. We're using DJIs for bee research. So if you're into this from a research standpoint, this is really cool. This has got technology, right? And drones in it. Last article, we'll jump on here in kind of like a regulatory corner, because this is an industry first where the FAA is accepting Delta's plan to use drones for maintenance inspections. So rather than have a human being perform some visual inspections on the exterior of an aircraft, they're actually going to allow a drone to perform this inspection. So it's using a drone in order to do a compliance regulatory task that is not associated with flight, but the maintenance. So pretty interesting here. Now, when I scroll down, looks like a DJI drone.
Funny how that works.
Can't
huh?
get away from them, huh?
Can't get away from them. What do you guys think about this? Using drones?
It's definitely a step in the right direction. Anything to get me off the tarmac as fast as possible. Hopefully they can hook the ice, the de-icer to a drone soon. It's been one too many times I've had to sit on the tarmac waiting for somebody to spray the plane. 40-minute delay.
Yeah, I could see drones, because instead of the aircraft having to go I don't know. There's kind of like a certain area you go to, because when they're spraying the de-icing, they don't want it to be... I was thinking the drone could fly right to the aircraft while it's up against the gate. The only problem is you don't want to spray this stuff around where, you know, your everybody else is loading and marshaling aircraft. So, but it could be quicker, right? If instead of a person, because if you see them in the truck, like there's someone up top that's spraying it, and then there's someone in the truck and they're having to drive and move the truck, and they don't want to hit the tail of the aircraft, you know, and bang and cause damage. So it's a very lengthy process, where if they could put this into a drone with some sort of a hose, the way that they're washing, they could potentially speed things up.
I mean, it'd definitely be faster.
And so for these initial inspections, and it seems interesting, because now we're going to ask ourselves, how often do planes get hit by lightning? These conditional visual inspections, so the initial inspections that they're going to use the drones for, will be following lightning strike events. The use of drone inspections has been added to the aircraft maintenance manual for Delta's entire mainline fleet. So this is a huge thing. This is Delta Airlines rewriting their aircraft maintenance manuals in order to outline that should a lightning strike occur, a drone will be used for visual inspection.
And to answer your question, how often do commercial airplanes get hit by lightning? It is 1 to 2 times per year on average.
1 to 2?
Yeah, 1 to 2.
Each airplane?
Yes.
Hmm. Yeah, so that seems like if you're having to, you don't know where the lightning struck, you don't know when you gotta get to the top of the aircraft structure, you have to visually look at the top of the aircraft structure. Man, you can just pop a drone right up. So once the images of the airframe are captured, trained tech ops technicians and inspectors will evaluate those photos to determine airworthiness prior to returning an aircraft to service, like they have historically. And then, so they even touched on what I was just thinking here, right? The introduction of this drone technology removes the risks associated with technicians and inspectors working from heights. Along with reducing the risk of injuries, the technology will help technicians and inspectors make decisions on aircraft conditions up to 82% faster. That is awesome. That is awesome.
That is insane.
Do you see what's mounted on here? It is hard to see. And I would bet $10,000 that is a LiDAR puck. You can mount dual gimbals to this aircraft right here, the 300 or the 350. So again, why is this important? To do this inspection, you're getting close to this aircraft. You want to be able to get as close to this aircraft as you can without hitting it. So having LiDAR and using the LiDAR, not to measure, not to create models, right? But that puck, that LiDAR puck, is used to make sure that this drone does not hit that structure.
Well, I would say they would use it to make models. So they fly around the drone, have a set path they would fly around the drone, and then they can go into a software. Instead of looking at a bunch of photos or video, you just kind of zoom around, look at the most common areas.
Yeah, I potentially, but what I'm saying is they're not using it to like make a model in real time that they're then going to, because from a lightning strike, a LiDAR point cloud won't show you anything. If lightning hit the aircraft and caused damage, you're just going to see it in visual pictures. So in this operation, that LiDAR is being used. It could be used for other things, but the last thing you want to happen is if this hits that aircraft, you've created more problems than you're solving. And so enhanced situational awareness, that is going to keep this drone. That LiDAR puck is going to guarantee that this drone won't strike the aircraft. Even in low light, no light conditions, because your visual sensor isn't going to be able to see things in the dark. that LiDAR is going to be able to maintain an exact perfect distance away from the aircraft. If you tell it to stay 10 feet away, it'll stay 10 feet away. If you say 15 feet, it will stay 15 feet away. Without even having a model, because it doesn't matter what it's near. It just knows not to get this close to whatever the object might be. So that's crazy. 82% faster. And people don't have to get up in heights. So
yeah, they don't have to spend 40 minutes driving the slowest piece of machinery ever across the airport.
Be neat to see how that that technology develops in order to speed up other aspects of aviation maintenance. It's really cool using drones to inspect aircraft. It just seems really, really neat.
Pretty soon you'll have drones inspecting other drones.
And then the drone is at the airport. This is the other fun part, right? Is where you traditionally don't expect drones to be, because where are these planes at? They're all at the airport. The good news is, though, is again, that drone doesn't need to go 400 feet in the air in order to inspect that plane. That drone only has to go 10, 15 feet above the aircraft itself. So that'll be pretty cool. They'll have the drone inspection area. So it's like you have to have the airplane parked over here in order to do that inspection. Well, great information. The Shenzhen Light Show, real, fake, we'll let you guys decide. 10,000, 1,000, right? One time, 10 times. Either way, really exciting to see that development. GeoNet RTK. When we think about drone light shows, right? RTK, the precision of those light show drones, is probably pretty important. The more drones you put in the air, right, the less tolerance, the more drones you're going to have in a certain area. So drones can't be off by 3, 5, or 10 feet. Otherwise, they may be hitting other drones. So it'll be interesting to hear and learn more about how RTK positioning is in fact enhancing drone light shows. Cloud-based software from Flyability, really neat, as Terry mentioned, you know, the ability to, like a Google Drive, to now share that within an organization very easily is exactly what Flyability is trying to produce. So you can come to them, get the hardware and the software in order to fly your missions and extract the information from the data. Counter UAS systems, microwave, melting drones out of the sky. Really, really neat, really interesting find there, Terry. You know, as the contemporary operating environment evolves, folks are always going to find ways to take proven existing technology and just adapt it in order to do, you know, more things. So really neat to see that happening. The what? Detect, identify, track, and destroy, right? Defeat. Or defeat. Google Wing and Serve Robotics bringing a next step in automated deliveries and efficiency, and Matternet launching some drone operations in Silicon Valley. So more areas of the United States starting to see these operations popping up, really exciting. Need to see DJI drones being used and leveraged in Western North Carolina to, you know, help victims recovering from this devastating disaster. Bee tracking, super cool. The use of small rucksack technology, radar rucksacks for bees that can then be easily located using special sensitive receivers that are mounted onto drones in order to, you know, watch and track movement and see how pollination patterns are going. That's really cool. And then finally, in the regulatory corner, we see that the FAA has accepted Delta's UAS inspections. And, you know, reading into how they've integrated that the drone as a tool, just like they would with any other piece of equipment for inspections, they've written that into their aircraft maintenance manual for lightning strikes. So it's really neat. It's a huge first step in getting folks to start to see the value in using, you know, just another kind of computer-based technology to collect data in order to enhance the inspection processes. So fantastic episode. Samuel, Terry, you guys have any final closing words here?
Nothing for me. Just make sure you guys get some good sleep. I know I will today.
Kind of curious sleep. To see That's more of the drone industry expand, not only within the aviation community, specifically with the airplanes and stuff, but more so kind of where drone delivery is going, because I wasn't really expecting it to head back to Silicon Valley. That's kind of surprised me when I saw that article, but cool to see it there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's so much developing, and it's all happening at the same time, right? All these various markets within the drone industry. The drone is a vehicle, right? The drone itself is a vehicle. As I've always told people, the coolest part of being involved in drones is to get to see where it takes you. And, you know, sometimes you're here, you're talking about drone light shows, you're talking about healthcare, you're talking about sports and cinema. Again, as a vehicle, it's just really cool. And, you know, you think of the Dr. Seuss, oh, the places you'll go. It's like, oh, the places that drones will end up in the use cases. And I will just echo Terry's sentiment about getting some sleep here. I get about four or five hours of sleep, and I can tell it is absolutely kicking my ass. And one of the biggest things I've been hearing recently is the importance of sleep, right? The real importance of sleep. It gives us our energy. It drives our appetite. Go get the sleep, because even if you're functional and you're effective on, you know, lack and little sleep, you probably could be doing even more if you just take the time to shut the computer, you know, turn off the screens and get some rest. But again, thank you for everybody for tuning into this week's episode. If you have questions, if there's something you want to share with us, again, we're going to start bringing some guests on now that we have our feet underneath us here. But you can always email Paul Rossi, R-O-S-S-I at 910drones.com. We appreciate you tuning in, and we will see you next week for another episode of Weekly Wings. Fly safe, everybody.